The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
Good morning. Welcome to Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. I'm Gina Mastrangeli, a longtime member of this fellowship, and I welcome all of you here today. And thank you for showing up. Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship is a caring community that aspires to empower people to grow spiritually, nurture one another, and work for justice and stewardship of the earth. As a community, we welcome each other here today. Whoever you are, whatever your background, wherever you are on your spiritual journey, we welcome you into our circle of love and compassion and joy. We extend a special welcome to any visitors here this morning. Please let us know who you are. If you're on Zoom, we invite you to sign our online visitor card that's in chat. And if you're here in the building, please let us know after service. And for both online and in the building afterwards, we have an informal fellowship time so that we can get to know you better. For today's service, Lorraine Lee, there she is, my partner in all this, our purpose was to begin a conversation about God. In 1985, the UUA revised our principles and deleted all references to God. UU congregations and fellowships welcome people with a wide variety of beliefs into our community: deists, theists, agnostics, atheists, earth-centered worshipers, and keep on adding the descriptions. To enrich this morning's service, we ask people to share music, poetry, a reading, artwork that express their beliefs in spirituality. We received so many thoughtful responses to our requests that we have a full program. So let us now open our service as we do each Sunday by lighting the chalice. The flaming chalice symbolizes our liberal religious faith. Mary and Augustine will lead us.
Good morning. We will light the chalice with two poems. The first one is from Emily Dickinson. Faith is a fine religion, fine invention. Let me start again, I'm sorry. Faith is a fine invention. That gentlemen can see, but microscopes are prudent when there's an emergency. The second poem by Langston Hughes. I am God, without one friend, alone in my purity, world without end. Spring, life is love. Love is life, only better to be human than God and lonely.
As Marian lights the peace lamp, may peace be with us.
And with all the people of the world.
Okay, Andre.
Good morning, everyone. Today I'm going to share a song that has always intrigued me. This is a modern version of an old classic that many of you may be familiar with. It was originally composed 60 years ago by Paul Simon. And according to him, it's about people unable to love or communicate with one another. I might add that it could also apply to those unable to communicate with God, the divine, or whatever spiritual forces might exist in this world, especially during the tough times. You can stand and sing as you're willing and able.
Softly creeping, left its scenes while I was sleeping, and the vision that was planted in my brain still remains within the sound of silence. Restless dreams, I walked alone. Narrow streets of cobblestone. Neath the halo of a street lamp, I turned my collar to the cold and damp. When my eyes were stabbed by the flash of a neon light. Split the night and touch the sound of silence. And in the naked light I saw 10,000 people, maybe more. People talking.
Ages, we have Brooke and our children. in heart. Not necessarily in body.
Hello? Hi. All right, yes, I have props and I need a lot of help. So if any kids want to come up and help me, that would be great. This is my son, Roland, and my husband, Matt. He's going to help me. So I'm going to read the story, and if my friends here can match an object to the picture and show it or throw it or squirt it at me only, that would be wonderful. You can help me read this story. So this is You Are Light by Aaron Becker. All right, this is the light that brings the dawn. To warm the sky and hug the land. It sips the sea to make the rain. Which waters the wheat to grow the grain. It feeds the leaves that shade the earth. It brings to life each blossom's birth. Petals. Real petals. It lights the moon to kiss the night. Ooh, yes, that is the moon. This light is you, and you are light. And this is the light that dwells inside all the brilliant wonders of the world, including you. Thank you guys for your help today.
Okay, we'll sing the children off to class.
Go now in peace. Go now in peace. May the spirit of God surround you everywhere.
Our first participant is on Zoom, Karen McCann.
Good morning. Thank you. Do I believe in a higher power? When I think about a higher power, I tend to think about the universe in general as the power over all of us. I don't tend to think of God per se, although I do pray to God. This subject is very confusing to me and always has been. I do not have a blind belief in God, just because that's what most religions dictate. Being a Unitarian, and sometimes in my brain still a Catholic, there is no God that must be followed or revered. We have the choice to believe in nothing, nature, God, or any other higher power that we conjure up. With my oldest daughter seeing a white dog on many highly emotional occasions, two of which I was with her, and I did not see any white dog. And the butterfly, probably a blue butterfly, that signified the loss of her newborn. That butterfly seen by many family members after that. And the Canadian geese that early morning, floating down from the dark sky to land all around me in the courtyard on my first day of return to work after my mother's passing. I have to wonder. It makes me question, so is there something? I tell people after they've lost a loved one to watch for the signs. Look for them. Recognize them as a moment in time with your loved one. So where are these signs coming from? My friends are all firm, staunch believers in God. not a God, but the God. They also believe that they're going to a better place. I like to think that, but I honestly do not believe anything like that. Our souls may go somewhere, but on the other hand, there may not even be a soul that resides within us, and our death is simply the end of life, and there's nothing more. Our children remember us, and then the next generation after that will think of us as a relative when they hear our name, and then we slowly fade away. I don't know how we got here, nor will I ever know. It could be that we were placed here by a higher power, and it could also be the collision of stars and planets form the energy for the beginnings of nature and humans. Who knows? I think the belief in a higher power is a comfort. I think it's also a way to keep man on the straight and narrow. Man devised the Bible, possibly wrote it as a force to control others. They are lovely stories, but I believe them to be that, stories, for a purpose. Many religions are the same. There's a deity at the top, and what flows beneath are rules in writing. Each religion interprets the meaning of the rules in their own way. It's possible that all of the deities are the same one, and the rules are basically the same for everyone. We don't know. It's a question that makes every human wonder why we are here. How did we get here? And where are we headed after this? I hope to see you on the other side. And now we'll turn this over to Larry Hare. Thank you.
Thank you, Karen. Good morning. I'm happy to be here to share my story with you today. I was raised in the Midwest as a Protestant and was involved in several different denominations over the years as I migrated east. In the mid-80s, I lived and worked in a Quaker community down near Wallingford. As you may know, Quakers do not have ministers. They believe in the inner life, or the light within every person, which is the direct awareness of God that allows a person to know God's will for her or him. This felt right to me, since I could never relate to an image of an old white-haired man up in the clouds waiting to answer my personal prayers. Like the Quakers, I believe that we all have the inherent ability to know right from wrong, influenced, of course, by those around us and the nightly news if we let it. So how does this relate to TPUF? Well, without telling me, Susan was also searching, and she visited Thomas Paine. To make a long story short, I joined her and we eventually became members. On the surface, TPUF and Quakers may not seem to have much in common, but I think the commonality is compassion, caring about others, regardless of differences, and being involved in your community and the world. This, and Susan, of course, is what brought me to Thomas Paine.
This next song, they say Believe, I asked Christine if she would sing it. She gave me the recording. The first time she sang that, this song, it really resonated with a period in my life, and I just thought that this was something for us all to remember when we get so caught up in what we believe, that to remember how somebody else might be feeling. Smite, please.
I'm lost in the world and all its words. Help me sort it out. I'm tied up have heard. What's life all about? What's our role? What's our part? Why do we even exist? Why can't I accept God in my heart? What am I trying to resist? Is there really something more than just what I see? Is there an open door to a life of eternity?
Good morning. I'm Steve Peterson. God, are you there? Of course you are. Else all this stuff, how did it get here? It didn't just make itself, did it? Who made it, and what makes it do the stuff that it does? And why? Psalm 19 tells us, the heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament showeth his handiwork. Great minds have figured out what all this stuff is and what it does. Newton showed us the clockwork of God's universe. Einstein showed us that Newton wasn't quite right, that this stuff of God's universe and what it does can turn into each other, and that the clockwork of God's universe is funky, warped. Dolly showed us this too. When others said that the universe operates with uncertainty, Einstein replied, God does not play dice. And then he admitted he was wrong. God does play dice. Some people look at things as they are and ask, why? Other people look at things as they are and ask, why not? Like the incredible string band, God the Juggler. It's as good an answer as any.
Gather round, friends, and I'll show you what I made. Something in my bag that will surprise you. Oh, it's a secret, don't push, I'm not ready. Something to dazzle your eyes. Oh, something to blow your mind away. Something that I made today. The first little ball is red and green.
Oh, it's pretty.
Yes, I know what you mean. I call it substance, do-de-o-do. What it will do, I just don't know. First and only juggler, oh, I must be the best. I love to see the ring spin, never at rest. Up in the air and back to me. And what it will do, I just can't see.
Something to blow your mind away. Something that I made today.
Next little ball is silver and black. See it chase the first one forward and back. I call it space, do-de-o-de-o-de-o. What it will do, I just don't know.
But it seems to make a difference just to have it so. While it's changing.
The next little ball is too hot to hold. I have to keep tossing it and I hope it gets cold. I call it power do-de-o-do. What it will do, I just don't know.
But it seems to make the whole thing a mihoochie mihoochie rattle and go. While it's changing.
First and only juggler, and I must be the best. I love to see the ring spin, never at rest. Up in the air and back to me. And what it will do, I just can't see.
Something to blow your mind away.
Orange and blue. I can't juggle four, so I toss it to you, and I call it time.
What question did you have? At first blush, the question appears quite simple, to have two possible answers. Yes. The answer one gives might be based on the human beings. The answer also might be based on the human beings and the whole present. Or God of lesser power. However, I suspect that there is yet another more profound answer. Maybe. I personally have spent a great deal of time trying to figure out if there is a God, and if so, what powers does that God have? So how does one finally become sure, one way or the other, that God is there or not there? Years ago, I went west to Indiana University to attend a month-long Bible Institute. It was sponsored by the Eli Lilly Corporation, which was determined to return Bible reading to the schools after that practice was shut down by the Supreme Court decision in Abington School District versus Shemp, which was in 1963. Those of you who know me well might wonder, what was I doing at Bible Institute? Quite simply, the invitation was too enticing. For 1 month of my time, I was to be awarded 6 graduate credits for absolutely free, compliments of Eli Lilly and Company. I was very poor at the time, with aspirations for advanced college work. So I applied as an atheist and was accepted into the program. I said I thought I could provide a perspective that might not be there. It was an interesting experience, especially watching some of my more devout Christian classmates struggling under the various interpretations of the Bible, not to mention the many versions of it that we studied. But there was a kernel of information that I have never forgotten. One afternoon, our course professors had arranged for a rabbi, a priest, and a minister to come to speak to us about their own personal beliefs in God. The discussion became quite intense, especially when some of the doubters or non-believers pressed these men for proof of their God. The priest and the rabbi gave answers that I do not recall. But the Protestant minister really caught my attention when he said very slowly and with some effort, "Well, for me, it is quite simply a matter of faith. I do not need proof of God's existence. I believe it to be so." That stuck with me, particularly because this man seemed so very sincere. He wasn't thumping his Bible, imploring us to look at its pages for information. He simply was stating his own belief system. I never forgot this incident, which happened when I was in my early 30s, and as all of you know, I'm now 80. Isn't that amazing that I remembered it all this time? So jumping forward to the present, what would be this minister's answer to our question, "Are you there, God?" I think without a doubt, yes, and he would not have to hear the answer from God himself. It would come from within. Some of you might have had, or do have, a similar belief. Others of you may be struggling, and still others are thinking that is a silly question. For me, the answer has been developing from no, all the way through maybe, and finally landing at yes. It's quite a surprise that I find myself a believer, but I finally think that I am. A while ago, I was watching a podcast designed to help people who were struggling to figure out whether God exists. The presenter asked, "Do you know of Christ? And if so, do you think he was a liar?" If your answer to the first question is yes, and to the second, that is the question, "Do you think Christ was a liar?" is no, then how can you help but believe that God exists? Christ stated that he was the Son of God. If you believe him to be a teller of truth, then you have proved for yourself that God exists. He is the Son, and God is the Father. It's that simple, logically. Oh, and it might also be a matter of faith.
I'm Gina, again. The day my seventh grade science teacher taught evolution, my religious life splintered. My Sunday school teacher counseled me to have faith. My minister, on the other hand, assured me, "Oh no, we don't take the Bible as literal truth. The creation story is just a metaphorical narrative to explain something that we don't understand." Yet, you know, I still felt a little unsettled about this God issue. Something didn't feel right or didn't compute. So I casted my vote with the scientists and the Big Bang theory, with reason and the atheist. So with math and science, we're on solid ground, or so I thought, until I studied mathematics. The mathematical building blocks from which we derive all our mathematical statements are commonly agreed definitions and beliefs, not facts or truths. These beliefs we call axioms or postulates, and changing an axiom gives birth to another mathematical system. So for example, do you remember Euclidean geometry from high school? Well, Euclidean geometry is built upon Euclid's five postulates, five given self-evident beliefs. The first postulate states that between any two points, there exists a straight line. And that's not too hard to accept, maybe. And the next three postulates are also fairly easy to accept. Now, it's the fifth postulate called the parallel postulate. And this is a little more complex. It states that, say this is my plane, and take a given line, the edge here, and let's make a point right on here. This parallel postulate states there's only one line through this point that is parallel to our given line. If we accept that, we get Euclidean geometry, the geometry of the plane, as the flat plane. However, if we change or exchange Euclid's parallel postulate with a postulate that asserts there are no parallel lines, all straight lines intersect, then we build a different but equally valid geometry. It's the geometry of the sphere. Or if we assume that there are many parallel lines passing through that point that don't intersect our given line, still another geometry. And this is the geometry that Albert Einstein used to describe space-time in his general relativity theory. Okay, so mathematics is built on commonly agreed definitions and beliefs that build different systems. I turn to science. Could science bring me closer to the truth? So for today, just for today, let's consider the question, how did the universe begin? Some people believe the Genesis creation story, some believe the scientific theories, and in between the two, or maybe on the sides of the two or up and down, lots of interesting creationist stories. In fact, physicists have conjectured many grandiose theories, the Big Bang, the cyclic model, universes are born in black holes, and so on. I think there are about seven of them. Well, just recently, the theoretical physicist Sabine Hossenfelder published her book, Women's History Month up there, the book Existential Physics, which discusses how physics relates to such questions as this. And this is what she asserts, and I'm going to quote her. Not one theory is backed up by evidence. Scientific endeavors are fundamentally limited because as we go back in time, we have fewer data. So what happens is the theoretical physicists invent mathematical models which we also know are founded on belief, that are consistent with their conjectures, but they can't conduct the experiments to verify their speculations. So therefore, theories about the creation of the universe, both scientific and the theist models, have equal weight. Neither can be verified with objective experimental observation. Different beliefs predict the same outcome, the universe as we know it. Okay, so my investigation into the logic-based subjects exposed that reason illuminates the limits of reason. And yet, in a strange way, I find this liberating, because another piece of me learns from experience, feeling, and intuition. So now let's turn to our Sunday's theme. When you hear the word God, whether you're a believer or a non-believer, what concept does that invoke? Well, the God that I envisioned in my youth, before seventh grade, was a supernatural being up there, right up there, right? Separate from you and me, a God who dictates rules and regulations for us sinners to follow if we desire eternal salvation. And by high school, I had rejected the dogma, but I still embraced the spiritual aspects of my religion, that there is an energy of compassionate love that is inclusive of all people, a force that gives us strength as we strive for moralistic goodness and as we work for justice in the world. And during the late 60s and early 70s, along with the incredible string band, the Eastern religions were very much in style. And so spiritual ideas like be here now and we're one with the universe, I took in and intertwined with those ideas from my past, the spiritual part. And this intermingling of East with West helped ease my religious tensions. But what word do I use to call that energy that draws out compassionate love and gives power to transform self and community? That feeling of awe when one looks up at a starry sky, witnesses the miracle of birth, and experiences healing, whether it be spiritual or physical, and that sensation of connection to the world around. Well, the concept I want to describe is inexpressible. Even Lao Tzu agrees. He says, the Tao that can be named is not the eternal Tao. The Tao being the term for formless, non-material reality that is the source of all things, as well as a way of life lived in accord with such reality. So basically, we're caught in a language trap. Once we speak a word, we confine the concept or confuse it. And it's one of the reasons the word God is problematic. It can be confused with dogma and a lot of other stuff. So the liberal Christian theologian Marcus J. Borg uses the word God interchangeably with the words the sacred and the spirit, because he thinks of God as an ever-present force that is around and within us. God is in everything, within you and me. And if I use the word God, I kind of have a hard time with it. God being in me, maybe new, but I'm not sure too sure about me. Okay, but it's not a supernatural being separate from us. The sacred is about relationship and connection, not separateness and differentiation. The spirit opens the self to compassionate living, not a dutiful obedience to dogmatic codes. And by the way, these liberal Christian theologians view Jesus as a wise teacher, a man who personified the life of godliness, same as Buddha did. The resurrection, according to them, is a spiritual transformation, not about a physical body. Okay, let's go back. little tangent there. Do you remember last year when Reverend Terry Afori talked about beloved community, your sermon? Well, I found it to be a most significantly spiritual, meaningful sermon. She preached that if we aim for an all-inclusive, just world without hatred, racism, and poverty, the beloved community, we must liberate ourselves from that which enslaves us. So if we harbor anger, pride, judgment, self-righteousness, distress, worry, alienation, fear, powerlessness, pick your most demonic shadow. Maybe it's being on center stage. Then we will disperse what we are. So to liberate ourselves from our shadow, it takes courage to break through that tough, thick ego shell, to dive deep into our core selves and sit with it, sit with our shadow. And don't fight it or shoo it away or try to bury it. It will only grow stronger. But by embracing and accepting ourselves without judgment or rationalization, will enable the ego boundary of self-interest to melt away and connect to the spirit of life. The power and wisdom within can guide and recenter each of us. And this next little sentence is from my yoga teacher. It's not about perfection, but understanding the patterns that unbalance us and then finding ways to bring us back into equilibrium. Okay, so once centered, not easy to do, by the way. Another sermon, three sermons. Okay, bathed in love and inner peace, the heart opens into a wider community of being. We move inner loving compassion outward in a way that connects and forms relationships with one another. The central dynamic is about the transformative power to transcend self and live in relationship with the spirit of life in beloved community. So now for our next perspective on silence, Jeannie Henderson will read her poem, and then we will have a minute of silent meditation. After, Mike will lead us into matters of the heart.
This meditation is going to take some action on your part. Just follow the words. Stop. Listen. Listen again. Do you hear it? Take it. Savor it. Give it to yourself. It is free. It renews and refreshes. It gives you strength. It gives your mind clarity. It comes in small bits and pieces. Money can't buy it. Friends can't give it. It's a precious gift you give yourself. Silence, silent moments, peaceful silence. Cherish them, cherish them.
We leave time in our services for those who are among us, either as regular members of the community or as guests. All are welcome to participate, to share matters that are lifting them up or weighing them down.
So if you, for those of you who want to stand and stretch as you sing, let's sing two verses of Spirit of Life. Okay, Marion, we will close with Marion extinguishing the chalice, and then afterwards, Nikki will give a reading of a poem that was meaningful for her.
As we close this morning, for all who see God, may God go with you. For all who embrace life, may life return your affections. For all who seek their right path, may the way be found and the courage to take it, step by step.
Hi, I'm Nikki. Thank you for being a space we can discuss all of these things. This is a poem by Rainier Maria Rilke from the Book of Hours. You, God, who live next door. If at times, through the long night, I trouble you with my urgent knocking, this is why. I hear you breathe so seldom. I know you're all alone in that room. If you should be thirsty, there's no one to get you a glass of water. I wait listening, always. Just give me a sign. I'm right here. As it happens, the wall between us is very thin. Why couldn't a cry from one of us break it down? It would crumble easily. It would barely make a sound.
Okay, that concludes our service today.